Hello, welcome to the committee. I'm Representative Connie Bernardi, and this is the Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee meeting in the Minnesota House of Representatives. Pursuant to Rule 1001, I call this remote committee meeting hearing to order, and CLA, please take the roll to determine which members are present. Thank you.
Chair Bernardi.
Present.
Bernardi, present. Vice Chair Christensen.
Present.
Christensen, present. Representative O'Neill. Representative Albright.
Present.
Albright, present. Representative Daniels.
Present.
Daniels, present. Representative Erickson.
Present.
Erickson, present. Representative Hansen.
Hansen, present.
Hansen, present. Representative Heintzman.
Present.
Heintzman, present. Representative Howard.
Present.
Howard, present. Representative Keeler.
Present.
Keeler, present. Representative Cleborne.
Present.
Cleborne, present. Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick, present.
Kosnick, present. Representative Krusha. Representative Mason.
Present.
Mason, present. Representative Meckland.
Present.
Meckland, present. Representative Noor. Representative Sandell.
Present.
Sandell, present. Representative Sandsted.
Sandsted, present.
Sandsted, present. Representative Thompson.
Thompson, present.
Thompson, present. Representative O'Neill. Representative Krusha. Representative Noor. And a quorum is present, Madam Chair.
And I believe Senator O'Neill just joined.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everyone. May I have a motion to approve the minutes for February 17th, 2021?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair Christensen. She moves the approval of the minutes for February 17th. Is there any discussion? Please take, I don't see any. Please take off your mute buttons. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes for February 17, 2021 are approved. On today's agenda, we will be hearing a pair of bills related to student loans. First, we will take up House File 1493 from Representative Stevenson, followed by House File 473 from Representative Hewitt. We will give each author a chance to introduce their bill, followed by testimony, and then a member of discussion and with member discussion and questions. Representative, the first bill that we have today is 1493, and we, Representative Stevenson, I will move that House File 1493 be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. We have before us House File 1493, Representative Stevenson, welcome to the committee, and please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It's my great pleasure to be before you this year to discuss a bill that I've carried for a couple years now. This year, we're calling the Student Borrowers Bill of Rights. By way of background, I'll note something that won't come as a surprise to the committee, that the student loan crisis in the United States is mammoth. Total student loan debt has surpassed credit card debt to become the second largest class of debt in the United States, with students owing a stunning $1.7 trillion. Here in Minnesota, there's over 775,000 student borrowers holding some $27 billion in debt. Those numbers are so big, they're hard to put in perspective, but since it's budget forecast week, I'll just point out that our state operates on about a $50 billion general fund budget every 2 years. So another way of looking at this is that students in Minnesota owe enough money to operate the state of Minnesota's general fund for a whole year. The problem is also escalating rapidly. Student debt increased by 127% between 2007 and 2017. It's also a statewide problem. 51% of millennials in Greater Minnesota report owning student debt, and a report from the Federal Reserve Bank identified student debt as a primary reason why young people are choosing to move from rural communities to the city.
Don't open your mouth.
Problems are endlessly complex. They are a confusing labyrinth of repayment plans, forbearance options, and refinance opportunities. If a borrower even makes the slightest misstep, they can watch their debt balloon out of control and see themselves suddenly become ineligible for forgiveness programs that they may have planned their entire education around. Minnesota law is stunningly inadequate at protecting student borrowers from even the most basic bad behavior by the private companies that service their debt. And that's why I'm bringing forward this bill, the Student Borrowers Bill of Rights, designed to help ensure our students aren't misled or maltreated by student loan servicers. This bill will help avoid catastrophic situations like the one that has developed around the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program. That federal program, which has been in place since 2007, promises borrowers that if they work in a nonprofit or public service setting for 10 years, the federal government will forgive the balance of their loan. But when the first batch of borrowers applied for forgiveness, the federal government rejected over 95% of the applications. Thousands of applicants have been placed by their servicers on the wrong payment plan to be eligible for the program, or engaged in a refinance that made themselves ineligible or hadn't gotten their employment certified. 10 years and thousands of dollars of payments, all for naught. In a moment, you're going to hear from some borrowers with similar stories about how the student loan industry has impacted their lives. And after that, I'd be very pleased to answer any questions that the committee might have. And Madam Chair, I do believe there's a couple testifiers.
Madam Chair, you're muted.
My technical expertise on the committee. Thank you, Representative Noor. We have Sarah Spleese. She's a high school teacher, English teacher at Anoka Hennepin School District. And we also have Verlina Bradley. She's a first grade teacher at St. Paul Public Schools. Welcome to the committee. Ms. Spleese, could you please proceed?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am a high school English teacher at Coon Rapids High School in the Anoka Hennepin School District, which is why I know Representative Zach Stevenson, and actually I've had the pleasure of working with Representative Bernardi as well. And so I'm just gonna tell you a little bit about exactly what Zach is talking about to like the nth degree, and then I'll let Ms. Bradley speak. Okay, so as I said before, I'm a high school English teacher at Coon Rapids High School. I reside in North Minneapolis, and I'm here to speak on behalf of the much-needed legislation to protect student loan borrowers. And I'm not just here for myself. I'm here because my students deserve this as well. They deserve to be able to go to college where there's a fair system in place for them to finance their education. As a borrower, however, my loans were sold. In 2008, I received my first master's degree, and right in time for the recession. And my loan was sold into 8 pieces. I was not aware that it was being sold into 8 pieces either, at an alarming 11% interest rate. When I was finished with my master's program, I realized that it was sitting there in 8 pieces. I quickly did, you know, what research I could on my own to find out how to consolidate those loans and get the interest rate down. In the meantime, I had to put my loans into forbearance because, well, the fun part is when you're getting a master's degree, you don't get unsubsidized loans, you get subsidized loans. At the time, there also wasn't federal funding for loans, which meant all of my loan providers were private institutions. when I attempted to consolidate my loans and enroll in an affordable income-based repayment plan, I needed help. Just being able to understand the jargon and the wherewithal to figure out how to put all of that together and see how you qualify is really different. It was really difficult. And what I found out is there was a lot of contradictory information that I was receiving. When you first make those phone calls to consolidate those loans, you just have an hourly employee that's trying to give you information. And often I found that the information was false, which then meant that I would have to start my application over again because I was going off of the poor information that they provided me, and then I was getting it sent back to me. And it's not as though they tell you, hey, you forgot to dot this I or cross this T, just do that and you can refile. It's you made this mistake, now start over entirely. That process meant that I did that 8 times. And it took 6 months for me to get into an income-driven repayment plan while the interest rate was 11%. While I had my loans separated into 8 different pieces. They accepted that after I graduated with my master's that I was going to be paying them $1,200 a month. I was making nothing. I was living off of, well, nothing because I was trying to get a job. So after I filed for that initial application, weeks passed. That was the other process too, is once you filed, it still took weeks, if not months, for them to respond to you to tell you that you did it wrong. And then eventually because my mom taught me how to advocate for myself, I was irate. And it took me calling, telling the hourly employee, no, I'm not talking to you anymore. Please have me speak to your supervisor. Please also then, when I spoke to that supervisor, send me all of this documentation in writing so that I have proof that I went through the proper procedures. But also know that my loans were in forbearance this entire time. And every year now I have to go through the same process. I am more witty and I am more wise. And I do have 2 master's degrees now, plus a bachelor's degree. So my loans are $148,000 with a 5.8 interest rate. So at least I got it down by half. When I finished my second master's degree, it was only $135,000. That's what the interest is doing to my payments. And even now in the time of COVID, this is what I really worry about as well, because although my loans have been deferred and I am part of the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, my loan servicers may have reached out to tell me that my loans were deferred. They did not remind me that I needed to re-up my employment certification. I was lucky enough to ask the right questions. But if I had not re-upped the employment certification in September, they would have kicked me off of this plan and I would have had to start over. And that is something that we need to think about now when we talk about these loan servicer borrower rights being violated, is how many public service loan applicants are going to get kicked off in September because they didn't know to ask the right question. And because the lenders are maliciously and intentionally not telling you that that's a step you need to take. Let's also not forget that they are intentionally not telling us. It is to their benefit to not help us make sure that we're following the proper procedures. And my other biggest worry is, although as a teacher, I can teach my students how to advocate for themselves to the best of their abilities, if they don't know to ask the questions, they aren't going to get the help. The answers should just be provided to them. The information, when you are a first-time loan, when you take out loans for the first time, should all be provided and explained. And instead, I'm teaching a college prep class, and that's what we focus on so that they don't get duped by these loan servicers. And I do also want to say this, that I'm a bit surprised that this is still a conversation, that we're still fighting for something so simple, because it costs nothing. And it does all the good. This bill is common logic. I don't understand why we already don't have it. When all I've asked for through all of my struggles is just accurate information so I can do what I need to get to a place where I can afford to pay my loans back, go through all of the hoops that I need to, but at least know that the hoops are there, so that I can stay in the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program and pay my payments. And the And I also just wanted to point out that it costs them nothing to continuously tell us no. It costs me everything. It costs them nothing to keep making me do it over and over again. It costs me $50,000, if not more, dollars in interest rates. And so they intentionally do this. It is malicious. It is a malicious act. And nobody deserves it, and especially not our students who are first just trying to navigate how college works, how to finance college. Now more than ever, when they can't even finance it hardly at all to begin with. I will just end by saying that now more than ever is the time for this very common sense bill to be put into place and to have the power of the state to cut through this red tape and help Minnesotans get answers and hold these loan servicers accountable. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Blees. Now with us is Verlina Bradley. She's a first grade teacher at St. Paul Public Schools. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you
so
much.
Please state your name for the test and do your testimony. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Verlina Bradley, and I am a first grade teacher at St. Paul Public Schools. Good afternoon, Chair Bernardi and members of the committee. Being a first grade teacher is definitely something that is prominent in my life, and I love working with the littles, our youngest scholars, but to be honest with you, their future can be bleak if they've had to deal with the student loan representatives as much as I've had. I'm in my 27th year of working in education, and this career has always been my first love, my everything. I eat, sleep, and dream education, not just for myself, but for my children and others. Serving students and families from my hometown community gives me such gratification and hope that I would not change my decision to become a teacher for the world. But pursuing my dream job has crippled my finances. I have incurred overwhelming debt, student loan debt mainly, and I have had to defer many of my American dreams of home ownership because the loans are sitting there. They've been sold to other companies. I don't know where they went. I don't know how much they are. And being a first generation college student, and now currently working on a doctorate at Hamline University, it's overwhelming to even know what the end is going to become. And as I gear up to register to start my third year at Hamline, I'm kind of afraid of what the end is going to be at $183,000 in student loan debt. The education loan debt is out of control, and it's burdening our students and working families across the country. And I know because I'm one of the 44.7 million Americans with education debt. In Minnesota alone, people owe $29.1 billion. So families are struggling. I'm in communication with other educators who say they're barely making these balloon payments, and their families are oftentimes going to food shelves and borrowing more money just to make ends meet. So I'm on a 10-year payment plan for the loans that I can't afford. And a few years ago, my wages were garnished. And I went through almost a 10-month stint of being garnished because they didn't give me the information. I didn't know how to navigate the system. I didn't understand most of the jargon and the words, you know, that they wanted me to know to try to help myself. And so I had to reach out to, like, Education Minnesota and other representatives just to figure out, how am I going to get through this? And it's been extremely difficult. So not being able to keep up with the payments is really hard for families, and especially those like me who are single parents. If it's not enough stress, I had to deal with the uncomfortable and abusive loan servers. When I tried to call them, they wouldn't answer my questions. They hung up on me. I've had to start over, call back, wait, and all of this in the middle of working as a first grade teacher, working at Cub, doing DoorDash, taking care of my children, and trying to find the time just to deal with this business, being on hold for over 30 minutes at a time, up to an hour. And as I'm sitting there and I'm talking to these people, they're talking down to you. No, this is your problem. And just saying things that are just degrading. And it was really sad to have gone through that process and to be abused that way and to not even get my issues resolved. I really didn't know what to do. So I started, you know, looking into the attorney general's office and trying to help myself. I've been misled into taking out loans with high interest rates with little to no information on the terms of the loan data. And I found out companies, you know, selling my information. So sometimes I didn't know who to talk to and find out who I owed. And then that's how my wages ultimately ended up getting garnished with no notification. Well, we mailed letters, we made phone calls, and I didn't receive none. Clearly, I'm a responsible adult in education. I know how to take care of some bills and things like that. But, you know, like I said, as I'm trying to finish, you know, a doctorate degree, I can't even imagine the struggles and the degrading, the miscommunication on their end, on loan servicers' end, that I'm going to have to deal with. A student loan borrower bill of rights will help protect myself and other Minnesotans from these abusive, being abused by loan servicers and their lenders. Tackling education debt is hard enough, so we should just make sure that those that are taking out loans get the help they need. They get the information they need. They have people who are kind and helpful, because it is a big decision to be a young student and come out of college with debt and not know how to navigate it. And I just know that because that's what I've experienced. So that's kind of what I have. And it's just been detrimental on my family, because even if I do try to get loans in other areas, the student loan debt is taunting over it. So I can't even go into home ownership because these loans and loan servicers are just sitting there. So I believe it's time for us to get to it and do something about it. Thank you for your time, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much for both of your testimony. We do have a member with a question right now, and that's Representative O'Neill. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to turn my camera back on here. So I'm not sure, because we don't have a list of testifiers, Madam Chair. Because we don't have a list of testifiers, I'm just wondering how many more testifiers there are. I do have some questions for the author when we get to the point of that. I'm just a little bit confused by the testimony, because I thought this bill was to license student loan servicers. And I'm hearing a lot of things that are kind of outside of the realm of that, like loans being sold, balloon payments, how to navigate through where to pay your student loans. And I'm just wondering how many more testifiers that we have, and I want to ask the bill author a few specific questions related to this bill.
Sure. Representative O'Neill, we have just the two today, the teacher, high school English teacher, Ms. Lees, from Anoka Hennepin, and then Ms. Bradley, the first grade teacher from St. Paul Schools, and then that's our testifiers today. So you may go.
So are you done with testifiers then, or do you have two more? I guess I was not clear.
No, that's it. We have two today. Complete with our testifiers. You may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for your clarification. I was just confused as to what was being testified to, because the underlying bill that we're talking about is really mostly dealing with the Department of Commerce, who will be licensing the student loan servicers. So I'm going to try to keep my questions and comments confined to what's pertinent to this committee. And I'm wondering if Representative Stevenson could help me get a scope of the problem, like how many predatory loan servicers do you think are out there, and how will this specifically help students? Because we certainly heard a lot of testimony about things that are outside of the scope of this bill, like balloon payments and loans being sold and not being able to navigate to figure out where to pay your loans. But this is just the licensure part of licensing the student loan servicers. So I'm wondering if he could let us know how far reaching the predatory business basically is of loan servicing, and how this specifically will help students. Thank you, Madam
Representative Chair. Stevenson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, and I appreciate your concern about the both the scope of the bill and the jurisdiction, you know, of this committee. I would kind of direct you more to Section 7 and 8 of the bill, and note that a lot of the problems that the testifiers here were talking about and other people have talked about being misinformed, misdirected, and mistreated by their servicers are directly prohibited under the prohibited conduct section of Section 8, or the duties of the student loan servicers under Section 7. So if you take a look at Section 7, it talks about transfers of student loans, which creates a section of duties for student loan servicers that could very well apply when someone is breaking up a student loan and selling it to 8 different people, as Sarah Splice talked about. When you look at the prohibited conduct under Section 8, Subdivision 1 talks about misleading borrowers, Subdivision 2, misrepresentation, Subdivision 4, inaccurate information. And so those are all things that are prohibited, obviously. And so, you know, the horror stories that you're hearing from the testifiers before the committee are directly affected by this bill. You're right that it does create a licensing regime, and that will be discussed in greater detail in the Commerce Committee because it will be a Department of Commerce function. But it directly gets at the problems that are plaguing students across Minnesota and, you know, people who are long past from being students who are still repaying their loans.
Representative O'Neill, do you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Stevenson, for pointing out the specific parts of the bill. It's hard when you've got a bill that has, you know, most of this is really within commerce. It just a little bit really pertains to the higher ed committee. So that's really great. Were you able to give us a scope of the problem? Like, do you have any numbers, or does the Department of Commerce have any complaints, or the AG's office? Do you have any substantiation of how far reaching this problem is?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, I don't have a statistic for you. I think that if you talked, I have heard the Attorney General and the Department of Commerce Commissioner both talk, the former Commerce Commissioner, Commissioner Kelly, talk about how they have heard a number of complaints and they receive a ton of complaints. I believe Attorney General Ellison has talked about how student loan complaints is a very common complaint that his office receives. I don't have any statistics in front of me. I think I'd be very happy to follow up with you offline to try and get some numbers. But, you know, I kind of reference back to what I said at the outset. We have 775,000 student borrowers in Minnesota holding $27 billion in debt. So this is a huge issue for Minnesotans. And I'm sure, you know, I certainly have heard from my constituents. I would venture to guess that you've heard from yours about problems that people have had with student loans in the past.
And Madam Chair, one last.
Yes, Representative O'Neill and Representative Kosnick, you're on deck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that. So I also noticed that quite a few financial institutions are already exempt from this, because I'm sure they already follow these procedures that we were just talking about. So I'm wondering, like, how many licenses do you expect to be, or how many student loan servicers do you expect to be licensed? Because you've really exempted out the vast majority, it looks like, of those that would be doing loans. So I'm just wondering how many more servicers you're talking about.
Representative Stevenson.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, you're correct that certain institutions are exempt, but I don't agree with the classification or the description that it would be the vast majority. It's important to note here that while the overwhelming majority of student loans right now originate from the federal government, they are almost all serviced by private companies. And so while the bill may exempt the federal government, from the bill, we can't regulate the federal government. The loans themselves are handled by private student loan servicing companies that would fall within the scope of the bill. There's a fiscal note that's being prepared that will have a good estimate of how many licenses we expect to be handled, and that discussion will certainly happen in the Commerce Committee.
Representative O'Neill. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just trying to get a scope of the problem, and maybe it's a little bit too early in bill presentation to really give us much data. So I look forward to follow-up offline conversation as to how far-reaching this issue is and how many servicers are actually included. And it's always good to know the scope of the problem. Thank you.
Thank you. And we have Representative Kosnick next, with Representative Cleburne on deck, and then Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Stevens, good to see you in committee. We haven't seen each other all session here. So I had a question on, is there a part of the bill, your bill, or maybe I see the department's on here too, that does any type of counseling for students? You know, if you're gonna take on $100,000 debt to get a particular degree that you're just enthralled with, but there's no demand for jobs to ever repay that loan, those financial challenges, I'm not sure, can be blamed to the servicer or whoever the lender is. And so if I could just get a little feedback, if your bill includes that provision to have some analysis done by the student and the borrower to make sure that they're making a good financial decision for themselves, or if there's a different mechanism in higher ed that the commissioner or assistant commissioner could comment on.
Okay, so at the end of it, you said you wanted the commissioner to answer?
I'm wondering, you know, the problem, Madam Chair, excuse me, if the author has a mechanism in his bill to address this very serious problem, mm-hmm. or if there's a different place that is apparently not being addressed, okay. That the department may know.
Thank you. Representative Stevenson raised his hand, so I'm going to go to him.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, Representative Kosnick, I agree with you wholeheartedly that there's a certain amount of education that needs to happen here about, and ideally on the front end before people take out student loans. In fact, I think that's a really impactful thing. You might remember that this bill last year included a student loan advocate position, and one of the duties of the student loan advocate in that bill was to develop an educational process for letting students know on the front end what they're getting into and how to navigate. We didn't include that this year, primarily because of the cost issues that were raised. We're trying to kind of break it down into some bite-sized pieces and start with the basic block and tackling of making sure we're holding these companies accountable. But I very strongly support what you're talking about and would, in fact, love to work with you on trying to develop that as we go forward. If I could also just take a moment, and it occurred to me after I finished answering Representative O'Neill that because the bill was around last year, we do have a fiscal note from last year's bill that might contain that information. So I went back and looked, and Commerce estimates that 20 companies would apply for licenses in Minnesota. So to Representative O'Neill's question, I'm sorry I didn't think of that backdoor answer sooner, but I was able to go back and look that up.
Thank you. Representative Kosnick, do you have a follow-up?
No, ma'am, and I'll refrain from adding any narrative too.
Thank you. We have Representative Cleburne and then Representative Albright on deck, and then our last person that has raised their hand for a question is Representative Neuer. So Representative Cleburne.
Sorry, I lowered my hand and forgot to take the mute off. First, I would like to thank the testifiers for being here and for sharing their very personal stories about financial debt. Most people don't want to ever do that in public, and it allows us to have a very important conversation. One of the things that I heard Ms. Spees say is that she borrowed $135,000, and because of the interest and compounding, she's now at $148,000 while continuing to make payments. These, I just want to acknowledge that, and I want people to think about it. And one of the things that I've spoken to Representative Stevens about is the compounding of interest and capitalization of interest. And while I know that's outside of the purview of this bill, it's a huge problem for all of our borrowers, and it's something that we need to address as a whole someplace in the conversation about student loan debt. The other piece that I heard made reference to that people were going out and taking these degrees where there's no job to support them. I understand that our first grade teacher who was testifying, I wrote your name down and I'm so sorry, I'm looking for you on my screen.
Ms. Bradley.
Thank you, Ms. Bradley, for coming back up on my screen.
Yeah.
First grade teachers who are going out to get PhDs to serve our community are not doing it because they just are reckless with their money. They're doing it because they understand the importance of having people with a lot of education making good policy decisions that will drive the lives of these first graders. And they are taking on debt in this regard to serve communities, to serve families. And I just could not let that comment go. So I want to honor the work that you're doing for our state and for our children. And if we would like to have a conversation in this committee about the importance of education and driving good practices for our children going forward, I'm happy to have that conversation all day long. But I just wanted to acknowledge those comments that I heard. And Representative Stevenson, I just want to thank you for bringing this important bill forward. Anyone who has knocked doors in their communities have heard these horror stories over and over. The bundling of the debt, the moving of the debt, the inability to get answers. We've had people who have been working in the nonprofit sector thinking their debt would be forgiven. They've taken these lower paying jobs for debt forgiveness, and then poof, it disappears. This is a really important piece of legislation, and I'm very supportive of it, and thank you for bringing it forward.
I think you're muted, Chair.
I got it. Okay, thank you. We are going to have Representative Albright ask his question now, and then move on to Representative Knorr, and then Representative Thompson, and then we will let Representative Stevenson give his concluding remarks, and then we will move on to the next bill. So with that, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, my first question is actually for you, because I'm looking at the body of House File 1493, and could you direct me to the section of the bill that pertains to this committee?
I am going to have our legal, our researcher answer that question for you. Mr. Nathan?
Madam Chair and members.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Hopkins, I'm sorry.
Madam Chair and members, so the bill is, the substance of the bill is entirely within the Department of Commerce. However, you know, the thematically, the bill is related to student loans and student loan debt. So I believe that's why the chair wanted to hear the bill and brought it before the committee for a hearing. But substantively, the bill is all within the Department of Commerce.
Representative Albright.
Madam Chair, notwithstanding the concerns that we all have for students and for individuals that want to advance their careers, that undertake contractually debt, and while I certainly sympathize with those and the the comments that have been made, I see no reason why we need to belabor this in this committee. It should be the domain of commerce. I think the chair of that committee, who was the author of this bill, certainly knows that as well. So I think we should move on.
Representative Knorr and then Representative Thompson, you are on deck. Representative Knorr.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Thank you to the two testifiers, Ms. Place and Ms. Bradley, and thank you to the author of the bill. This is an important conversation when it comes to higher education. Seeking a higher education should never be a burden to anyone. I'm one of those student borrowers who's still paying his student debt, and it's an important conversation for us to have because that's what is impacting and holding back so many students and families with their lives. So this is an important conversation, and we need to look into how the industry, the services are done in terms of lending to the students, which actually, quite frankly, disproportionately harms people of color and indigenous. So it's something that I think we need to look into to be able to understand the impact and the harm that has been done, and so that we can help achieve a successful outcome for all students. So thank you so much, Madam Chair. I will not put a question forward, so we want to proceed to the other conversation that we want to have. So thank you so much, Representative Stevenson, for bringing this bill forward.
Representative Thompson.
Hey, thank you so much. Real quick, Chair Bernardi, 12 years ago, my kid, I'm a new parent too, so 12 years ago, I was a new parent, but you know, just to bring my kid someplace for daycare. I wanted to make sure that there was somebody who was caring and also nurturing the kids. So I dropped my kid off at the Wilder Foundation. The first teacher I run into is Miss Bradley. She had my son, 12 years now, and still. But to see Miss Bradley on this screen saying that I've worked with DoorDash and I can't afford a home, and I know how serious she is about kids and education in our community, because my kid's 12 and still in contact with Ms. Bradley, and she's still in contact with the kids from that year. Here we are, someone that's really someone who can really help with the achievement gap. With we talk about finding qualified teachers of color, and we're punishing her for getting an education. Pretty much is what I feel like. You know, I know plenty of people with these lambskins and a lot of debt. So when we talk about how can we find more teachers of color, administrators of color, this is a roadblock right here in front of us. You know, there's no sense for us to have this higher education and then I have to go on DoorDash to pay off. You know what I mean? Like, and so I want to make sure that we're having a real conversation, not just saying, well, why are these people getting this debt? Because they want to make a difference in their community. I know someone also, not to just like go on a tangent again, I know somebody with a 4-year degree in mortuary science because they wanted to be a mortician, only to find out that these businesses are only ran by families. And so now I have a 4-year degree and student debt, by the way. I can't own a home, you know, because I have all this, but I have a degree. You know, so I just want to like have a real conversation. Maybe we could do this another time, but I do know that I didn't expect to see my son's Head Start teacher, then kindergarten teacher here, like, and saying I'm door dashing when I know that this is a pillar in our community that really cares for our children. So like, this is my life experience. And, you know, just because my lived experience is not everybody else's doesn't mean that it's not true. And I speak for Sister Bradley, that because her lived experience is not yours doesn't mean it's not true and that we shouldn't help. Thank you.
You're muted again, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Lees and Ms. Bradley. Thank you so much for your testimony today. Your stories really will help make a difference, and thank you for making the difference in our students' lives. I wanted to have Representative Stevenson wrap up with his remarks for his bill, and thank him for bringing it here today.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for hearing me out. Special thank you to Sarah Splice and Verlina Bradley for sharing their stories. I think I know from personal experience that Sarah Splice is one of the best teachers we have in Anoka Hennepin at Coon Rapids High School. We're lucky to have her up there, and I think we just learned a lot about what a great teacher Ms. Bradley is. And so thank you both for your work you're doing in our school system. That's phenomenal. I also want to take this moment to thank to point out something I didn't point out before, that this is a bipartisan bill, and thank my Senate author, Senator Zach Duckworth, for cooperating, and look forward to continuing this discussion in further committees. So with that, it's a good bill. I hope you all vote for it. Thanks.
Hearing no further discussion, I renew my motion that House File 1493 be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. The committee legislative assistant will take the roll.
Chair Bernardi.
Aye.
Vice Chair Christensen.
Yes.
Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill votes aye.
Representative Albright.
Aye.
Albright, aye. Representative Daniels. Representative Daniels?
Hi, can you hear me?
We can hear you a little bit. Can you say that again, Representative Daniels?
Daniels votes aye.
Okay, Daniels aye. Representative Erickson?
No.
Erickson nay. Representative Hansen.
Hansen, aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Heintzman. Representative Heintzman. Representative Howard.
Aye.
Howard, aye. Representative Keeler.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, aye.
Cleavorn, aye. Representative Kosnick. Representative Kosnick. Representative Kreisha.
Kreisha, no.
Kreisha, no. Representative Mason.
Mason, aye.
Mason, aye. Representative Meckland.
Meckland, no.
Meckland, nay. Representative Knorr.
Yes.
Nor aye. Representative Sandell.
Yes.
Sandell aye. Representative Sandsted.
Sandsted yes.
Sandsted aye. Representative Thompson.
Thompson yes.
Thompson aye. And Representative Heintzman. Representative Kosnick.
Pass.
I'm sorry, Representative Kosnick, could you repeat that just one more time?
I asked for a pass. I had to step out. I'm not sure which bill we're on right now.
This is for 1493.
No.
Kosnick, nay. There are 14 ayes, 4 nays, and 1 absent.
There being 14 ayes and 4 nays, the motion passes, and House File 1493 is referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. Thank you, Representative Stevenson and testifiers today. Our next bill up today is regarding student loan financing program eligibility expanded and money appropriated. We have House File 473 from Representative Hewitt. I will move House File 473 to be laid over. We have before us House File 473, Representative Hewitt. Please present your bill to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I just want to let you know the testifiers on hand to answer questions. Is Nikki Oliver, Grants and Government Relations Manager. Thank you for being here today, Representative Hewitt. Sorry to interrupt you. You may proceed.
No, thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for hearing the bill today. Many of you that were on this committee before, we actually presented this in the last session. And in today's world, we know that there's a number of individuals that are asking for forbearances on their student loans and not being able to get started with life. As a realtor, I see this all the time when they want to move into the real estate market and their debt-to-income ratio is just hammered by their student loan debt. This gives us a little bit of help with those. I would like the bill to go further, but this particular bill does, it's been in place now since I believe 2014 is when the first appropriation was done for this program. And I'm gonna let the testifier go into the details of what we did this time to change it. But basically what it does is it allows and opens up the door for more students to be able to go back and refinance those high interest rates and get going and move forward with their lives. If I could ask the testifier to go into the details of what we've done to tweak the program.
Yes. And can you just repeat the person who you mentioned so that I, Professor? What'd you say?
Person from higher ed.
I'm okay, sorry, person. I thought you said professor. And Perhaps Ms. Oliver is a professor. I am not sure. But welcome to the committee, Nikki Oliver, from the Grants and Government Relations Manager from the Office of Higher Ed.
Hi, Chair Bernardi and members. Sorry, I didn't know I was going to give a whole history lesson of the program, so I apologize. I'm not a professor. I do not have a PhD, unfortunately. I do have a master's, but it's not in economics or anything like that. So and we're talking specifically to the refi program, correct? And the refi program, certain changes that our agencies are allowed to make are to the debt, like the author mentioned, the debt to ratio and the interest rates. But the interest rates are a little more tricky because we do have bonds. But we did make some adjustments to the debt to income ratio. I don't have that necessarily. I was prepared for certain questions. I don't have that in front of me, so I apologize. But that was one of the changes we did make and adjust for the program. But I can answer other questions too, and I can follow up regarding if there were additional changes we made. I'd have to check with the program manager on that. But I know for a fact that was one of them for the refi program itself. And to the bill itself, this is the reason for it needing an appropriation, because any changes we make to the self or self loan, self refi program, we have to run through the bonding agency, and it's really hard to get those lower than what we already have existing thresholds, because it puts the other money at risk, and they tend to frown upon that. So it's definitely a needed appropriation to make those significant changes, because those are more high risk borrowers. And so that's the reason there's a necessary appropriation for this bill. And I'm available for additional questions as well.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hewitt.
Yeah, so I had to refresh myself. I just came from chairing another meeting here. So this bill basically does give some more consideration to the credit score. It did lower it a little bit, but then gave a higher score to the cosigner. It also needs another $25 million for appropriation. The total appropriation is $25 million, I believe. And then it also did some work on the loan to debt ratio. The important thing to remember about this program being ran by higher ed, though, is that it has a very low failure rate, that the people that get into this program actually have a very high success of finishing it and paying off their debt earlier. So it's a great program that they started a few years back. I'm happy my senator gave me this bill, so I'm happy to present it, and I stand for any questions.
Members, are there any questions for the bill author or Ms. Oliver? Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hewitt. Could you give me some further information in terms of what the terms are on a typical loan that would roll through the self-refi?
Representative Hewitt, would you like to answer that? Would you like to get Ms. Oliver or?
She can help if she wants. I do have an explanation from a constituent of who qualified for this program.
However you'd like to handle Representative Hewitt.
Yeah, basically this typical constituent, so a regular loan that came through here, had multiple loans, high interest rates, and basically they were able to consolidate all those loans into a lower interest rate, bring it in to this program, and basically improve their pathway towards relieving themselves of their education debt. If you have more to add about what you look at for a common borrower, that would be fine, Ms. Oliver.
Ms. Oliver, would you like to add something?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hewitt. So I can mention kind of the current rates for the program itself. So fixed rates currently for 5-year, 10-year, and 15 years are at 3.8%, 4.5%, and 5.3%. For the variable rates, that's 2.5%.
Ms. Oliver, could you just slow down for a second? Because I was actually writing those down.
No worries. Please. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So for fixed rates, at 5 years, it's 3.8% currently. For 10 years, it's 4.55%. For 15-year fixed rate, we're currently at 5.3%. For 5 years, for the variable rates, we're at 2.5%. 10 years, we're at 3.15%. In 15 years, we're at 3.85% interest rates.
Thank you. Representative Albright, do you have a follow-up?
I do. I have a couple, Madam Chair. The first one is for either Ms. Oliver or Representative Hewitt. Are there any types of loans that are excluded from being included in a self-refi?
Ms. Oliver, would you like to address that?
Sorry, Madam Chair, I was trying to find my unmute button here. I'd have to go back. We do have, they have to be qualifying loans and eligible loans, so I'm assuming there's a definition. And I can find that for you. The only ones that I currently see and know offhand that are not eligible are Parent PLUS loans. So we can't refi those currently.
Representative Albright.
Madam Chair, she mentioned, Ms. Oliver and Mr. Representative Hewitt also mentioned the default experience. Is there a percent on, per million loaned in terms of the default percentage that we could be aware of?
Ms. Oliver.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. For our overall, for self and refi, we're at 5.5% gross defaults.
Madam Chair.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I was a bank, I would not be too pleased with that default experience level. And I don't think if the government, this institution accepts that as a normative default rate on loans, I think we've got some real serious issues. And my final question, and this would relate to kind of a spinoff of House File 1493, who services the loans?
Representative Oliver. Ms. Oliver. And you're on mute.
Sorry, I apologize. I'm trying to get the answer for you. I don't have it off the top of my head. So as soon as I get the answer, I will respond. So I apologize for that. Oh, sorry. It came in. Representative Albright, it's First Mark. That's who services our loans.
Madam Chair.
Representative Albright.
Who was First Mark, and how did they get credentialed to service the loans?
Ms. Oliver.
Madam Chair and Representative Albright, what I think would be best for this line of questioning specifically is that I have our experts on hand. We are also testifying to our policy bill this week, which has some changes to the cell phone program, and we'd be able to answer these questions in more detail because I will have the program manager available. But they are a subsidiary of Nelnet, just so you know that.
Representative Albright, do you have a follow-up?
Madam Chair, I think that the conversation is too rich to continue based upon our conversation over 1493. Coming from the financial institution industry, I wish Representative Hewitt good luck.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a couple quick questions. Representative Albright asked a few of them. First for you, Madam Chair, is this being laid over or is this moving somewhere?
Yes, it's being laid over.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then kind of continuing on the conversation that Representative Albright started about the default rate, and I believe you said it was 5.5% default currently. And if I'm understanding the premise of this bill and the reason for the expansion, correct me if I'm wrong, but are we trying to capture even higher risk folks and cover more people with greater risk? So if so, and if that's accurate, what do you expect the default rate to do? I'm assuming you've already kind of considered that and maybe crunched those numbers that 5.5% default rate might actually go up. But has anyone worked that through, either the author or OHI, to kind of let us know what the impact of this is going to be? And Madam Chair, I'm wondering if this is going to be an ongoing appropriation or is this a one-time appropriation or how is that structured? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Hopkins address that one and then I'll let Representative Hewitt or Representative Oliver answer further if there needs to be. Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair and members, so the bill appropriates $5 million in fiscal year 2022 and $5 million in fiscal year 2023. So that format would set a base, so it would be $5 million per year of ongoing funding for this program under the bill as it's before the committee now.
Representative O'Neill, I'll let you ask the further question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much for that. So this is adding to the base, ongoing appropriation. And if we're loaning out money and getting money back, it's a little bit concerning that we continue to add $5 million every year into it. But you know what? Maybe there's good reasons for that. And I'm wondering if OHI could explain what they expect the default rate to go if it's 5.5% now. That the plan is to actually include even higher risk loans into this. I'm just wondering if they could let us know that. What's the plan?
Ms. Oliver.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, we have run the numbers. And just to clarify, that gross default is not just the refi program. It's also our larger self-loan program. But we calculated the total gross would go up to 12%. With these higher risk added, and that's the reason for the necessary appropriation to cover that higher risk. And it's not adding to the base. There's no base. This isn't an appropriated program. So there's no base here. This appropriation is allowing us to service those more higher risk individuals within the program so that current borrowers don't see their interest rates go up if we do see an increase in defaults because of this. So that's why there's a necessary appropriation there. And I'm hoping I answered your questions. And just to clarify too, the self-refi program actually has a less than a 1% default rate. And the only reason I didn't mention that before is because the program is still fairly new. But I just wanted to also point that caveat out.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just trying to understand the mechanics of this. It's so hard to do things remotely, Madam Chair. It's trying to look at things on my computer and things. So the risk right now is 5.5%, and we would go up to 12% of default. Excuse me, the default rate was 5.5, going up to 12% anticipated default. And I believe, if I understood Mr. Hopkins correctly, he did say that it's $5 million each year of the biennium, and then it would continue, which I understand that to be basically added to the base if that's an ongoing appropriation. I have some concerns here. That's an awful lot of money. I mean, that's a really high default rate. It's a really, really high default rate. So I have some concerns here. Thank you.
And I see Representative Albright's hand is up, and I'm thinking that he has another further question that he'd like to ask.
I do, Madam Chair. Okay. If Ms. Oliver could, or Representative Hewitt, and I'm tagging on to what Representative O'Neill just kind of was kind of touching on. So if this is not a base appropriation, but it's a refunding of the program, what happens to the program if there's no reappropriation that is approved by the budget that we enact in May for OHI? What happens to the current loans that are being serviced by OHI?
Ms. Oliver. Okay. I heard somebody's voice, and who was that?
That was me, Madam Chair.
Representative Hewitt.
Madam Chair, I think we're doing a lot of what-ifs here, right? And I'm glad that you're laying the bill over, because that gives me time to go back. I do have to say the percentage I heard of default was 1% on the self-funded, which is what we're talking about here today. And so I'm with you, Representative Albright, and Representative O'Neill. We need to look at this more. I think with the chair agreeing to lay it over, it gives me time to get back to the committee and let you know that, get you some more details that you're concerned about. This is on me. I should have came more prepared for this hearing today. But I really feel that with the way things are going and the amount of people that are out there that need help in this area and the help it can give it, and realistically, with a 1% default rate, which is low and acceptable, I would think that this is a program we got to focus on and look at. So with that said, I would like to get back to you with more of the information you have, and if the chair is okay with that.
Yes, Representative Albright.
Madam Chair, I'll defer to my colleagues who have other questions.
Representative, Ms. Oliver has her hand up. Did you want to make a comment, Ms. Oliver?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to respond to Representative Albright that the existing programs, the self-loan and self-refi programs, don't run on state appropriations. And they run on proceeds from the bonds and interest and principal from payments from borrowers. So in order to service more individuals that are higher risk, which is what this bill is trying to do with the changing of the refi program, our agency requests that there be a state appropriation to cover that, so it does not impact our existing program or borrowers. We also recommend there be a language added to this bill to allow for the funds to go into a special account, because the bondholders would require that. So even if this turned into a one-time appropriation, it going into a special fund that as loans are made, we would move them into a certain fund for the bondholders, only for those loans made, and the other ones would stay in the appropriation, but we would maintain and not exceed the loans within this high risk beyond the appropriation amount. So just to make that clear as well.
Representative Kreshaw.
Thank you. And so Representative Hewitt, I'm going to try to do you a solid here. Since we are working on this bill and you said there's still work to be done on it, would you like me to make a motion to put the bill on the table? If you leave this to be included, it'll probably never come up and see the light of day again. But if we put it on the table, we can always remove it at a later time when you have more information. So I'll leave it up to you, but rather than let this bill just get tucked away and never talked about again, with a motion to include it at a later time, a motion to table it would give you a little bit more ability to move this bill.
Representative Hewitt.
Representative Kreshaw, you know, I'm going to take your lifeline here, and if you're willing to help me work on this bill, being on higher ed and being on the other side of the aisle, I would love to continue with it because I think there's a lot of people this can help in the state. And if we're currently having a 1% failure rate, I really feel that this is something we could do. So if the committee's open for that, I am totally in favor of that at this point.
I see Representative Kreshaw, do you want to follow up or should I move to Representative O'Neill?
Well, I was just wondering if you're going to come back to me. So, Representative Hewitt, if you'd like that, I will make a motion to table the bill.
I'm not opposed to it, so I would go ahead.
Representative Kreshaw has made a motion to table it, and I need to check with our council here. Is that debatable, or do we just go to a vote? Mr. Hopkins?
Madam Chair, I'm not a parliamentarian,
okay.
But you can, if you table the motion, the bill wasn't moved to go anywhere.
Right.
It's not leaving this committee. You said that you were going to hold it over for possible inclusion in your omnibus bill.
Right.
So there is no motion to table.
Right. So I was going to just lay it over and we could recalendar it if we needed to.
Madam Chair.
There's hands up. I saw, now the hands have gone down. Representative Albright.
Representative Albright, the move to table the bill is a non-debatable, and you go strictly to a vote. It is non-debatable.
Okay, that's what I was trying to confirm. So Representative Kreshaw has made a motion to table Representative Hewitt's bill, House File 473. Just a minute.
Madam Chair, the proper motion is to lay the bill on the table.
Okay. So lay the bill on the table. House File, Representative Kreshaw makes a motion to lay House File 473 on the table. If the legislative assistant. I believe we go for, I just want to clarify this to our committee administrator, I'm going to go to him then. Do we go for a voice vote or is it a roll call?
I'm about the same parliamentarian Mr. Hopkins is, but I would say I think it is a roll call vote.
Okay, Representative O'Neill, I see your hand is up. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, we should do a roll call, particularly since we're all remote. I think that it would be complicated if not. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. If the committee administrator could take the roll.
Madam Chair.
Representative Sandstead.
Would you please restate
what we are voting on.
Okay, so this is, as I understand it, is that Representative Kreshaw has made the motion to for House File 4473 to be laid on the table.
Madam Chair?
Representative Sandstead.
If you are not 100% clear on the motion or the appropriateness of the motion, I would suggest you put this committee in recess until you find out.
Madam Chair, we have to vote. I'm sorry, but.
Madam Chair, this is Representative Kreshaw. Madam Chair, this is not a complicated thing. I'm trying to help Representative Hewitt by just simply putting the bill on the table, which can be recalled at a later time. The proper procedure is it's non-debatable, so the motion's already been made. The committee just needs to vote on it, after which, if we want to do a vote to reconsider, if you guys want to do some other gymnastics, fine. Representative Hewitt, I'm just trying to help you, and I'm hoping that your party sees that and would like to help you as well.
Representative Kreshaw, I will have you make your motion then. Restate your motion.
Madam Chair, I would like to make a motion to lay the bill on the table and call for a vote.
Our legislative assistant, take the roll.
Chair Bernardi.
No.
Bernardi, no. Vice Chair Christensen.
No.
Christensen, nay. Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill votes aye.
O'Neill, aye. Representative Albright.
Yes.
Albright, aye. Representative Daniels.
Aye.
Daniels, aye. Representative Erickson.
Aye.
Erickson, aye. Representative Hansen.
Hansen, no.
Hansen, nay. Representative Heintzman.
Heintzman, aye.
Heintzman, aye. Representative Howard.
No.
Howard, nay. Representative Keeler.
No.
Keeler, nay. Representative Cleborne.
No.
Cleborne, nay. Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick, no.
Kosnick, nay. Representative Kreshaw.
Kreshaw votes aye.
Kreshaw, aye. Representative Mason. Representative Mason.
Kosnick changes to aye.
I'm gonna pass.
Okay, so Mason passes and Kosnick changes to aye. Representative Meckland.
Aye.
Meckland, aye. Representative Noor.
No.
Noor, nay. Representative Sandell.
Name.
Sandell, nay. Representative Sandstead.
No.
Sandstead, nay. Representative Thompson.
Thompson, no.
Thompson, nay. There are 10 nays. Eight ayes and one abstain.
Can you repeat that number, please?
Yes, there are 14 nays. I'm sorry, 10. 10 nays, eight ayes, and one abstain.
Okay, we have 10 nays, eight ayes, one abstain. The motion
does not prevail.
It does not prevail. Representative, I see no further questions. Just want to make sure about that. Okay, Representative Hewitt, would you like to would you like to make any final remarks?
Well, thank you, committee, for a lively debate, and thank you, Chair. And I apologize for the chaos I created in your committee today, but I do promise and commit to working with you to make sure this bill is something you want to go forward with.
Okay, so thank you very much for being here today. Represented, hearing no further discussion, I will renew my motion that House File 473 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Higher Education Finance Omnibus Bill. The bill is laid over. Members, we are now, just wanted to remind you, we are meeting again at 5 p.m. tonight for our joint Higher Education Regents Committee meeting. And then tomorrow at our committee hearing, we will be having the Office of Higher Education in to do a walkthrough of their policy bill. With that, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.